Oi, oi, I'm Jimmy Bullard, and this is me old muck of Fenners. We're back together, son, how are ya?
Hi, Bully, great to be back working with you. Well, what are we doing here, though?
We're starting a football club in podcast form. The only thing we know, it's called FC Bullard. After that, it's all up for grabs.
So, we haven't got any players, we haven't got a kit, we haven't got a club badge, we haven't got a stadium.
Correct. FC Bullard, welcome to the club.
This is a Crowd podcast. Hello everyone and welcome to Beef's Golf Club. The club is expanding, so while my co-host John Robbins is away on tour, I'm recruiting some new members. Over the next couple of months, I'll be joined by some top guests to talk about the world of golf, and I need a hand with managing the club business too. We've got a quality guest in the clubhouse with us today. One of the world's top golfers. He's a seven-time PGA Tour winner. Not to mention two on the DP World Tour. It's Billy Horschel. Let's crack on. We've got an absolute unbelievable guest here with us today at Beef's Golf Club. It's Billy Horschel. What's going on, man?
What's up, buddy? How you been?
I'm great, mate. I'm great. All better for seeing you, man. What's been going on?
Not much, man. Got a few weeks off now, 5 weeks off. Spent four out of 5 weeks overseas, played the Irish Open, B&W PGA, French Open, and Dunhill. So I'm a little burnt out right now from golf, tournament golf, but I got some time off to enjoy with the kids and the family. So I had a blast over. I always love going over, but nice to have a few weeks off now.
My first question to that is, playing in Ireland, do you sample the Guinness?
I think I did have a Guinness. I mean, I've been over there before. It's not my first time in Ireland, but yeah, I've had a Guinness before. I've been to the Guinness factory. I've been to the observation deck up there and had a Guinness or two up top. So yeah, I've had my fair share of Guinness in my time over there.
It's something special, man. It's something special. My next question, what does Billy Horschel do off with 5 weeks off? What'd you do, man?
Oh, man. I wish it was like just on the water, do nothing. But last week I had a couple sponsor things I had to take care of. The last 2 days I've been up in Atlanta doing, a charity event for Arthur Blank, owner of the Atlanta Falcons, and Christian Brazilian Holt, PGA Tour player, raising money for, a studying center that Arthur Blank, founded. And then, drove down last night down to Sarasota. I got a event I hold, with the APJ Tour. It's a minor league golf tour. Majority of players on this tour are of minority descent, African Americans, and it's a great tour. It's my third year holding it, so I'm excited to see these guys again. They're unbelievable people. They're great golfers that are trying to make it to the professional level, to PGA Tour, DP World Tour, and so just trying to give them access to, play for more money, make more money. The purse is, I think, $150,000 for, I think it's 18 guys. So decent amount of money for the guys. And at the same time, connect them to sponsors and other people in the golf world, the business world that, would love to be part of that journey. So it's nice to see these guys and see, the passion they have for the game of golf. And these guys, in my mind, these guys are going to be the ones that are going to have the most influence going forward in sense of growing the game of golf, bringing it to new communities, reaching, kids that have never known about the game of golf and introducing them to the game of golf. So I'm really excited. Like I said, it's my third year doing it, and I'm here this week. And then I get a little more time off. I got some financial meetings I have to do next week. I've got a foundation launch with my wife at the PGA Tour headquarters next Tuesday. And then, I'll get a few days off, and then I got to start practicing again for Sea Island. So it's not always just go sit on the boat and try and catch some fish and drink a few cocktails. It's always something going on, but it's enjoyable. It's life, and you got to take full advantage of it.
That's incredible, mate. Like I'm knackered even listening to that. That's amazing. And love it, man. Absolutely love it. I think that's such a cool and great thing. And talking of these guys coming up and potentially chasing you. Obviously, you're such a decorated player yourself. I mean, FedEx Cup winner. I mean, 7 wins PGA Tour, 2 wins. I mean, it's some serious career you've got as well. Talk to me about some of your highlights of your career, some of your favorite moments.
Oh, man. You know, listen, every win has been an unbelievable highlight. Listen, winning the first time in 2013, the Zurich Classic, making a 25-foot putt on the last hole to secure the victory. You know, that was amazing. I mean, finally to get a victory, you know, was something I've always dreamed of on the PGA Tour. It took longer than I wanted. It took longer than I expected. Obviously, I had some injuries or an injury early in my career. Sort of, you know, just didn't derail me, but just put me a little bit further behind the eight ball than I would like. And, you know, you're still trying to find your footing early on in your career on the PGA Tour as a young player. And so to finally get that, you know, in 2013 and then go next year and win, you know, 2 FedEx Cup playoffs event, which ultimately won me the FedEx Cup. That's honestly the highlight of my career, to date so far is winning the FedEx Cup. And then the next big one, the next one that I say, hey, this is the next highlight of my career would have been the 21 BMW PGA at Wentworth. Growing up watching that event on TV, as I've talked about many times as a kid, you know, it's usually the first week we got out of school. And so I would just watch it on TV early in the mornings and just you could just see the crowd and you could see the energy. You know, you could feel it through the TV. You look at the players who have won that Hall of Famers, legends of the game, major winners. I mean, it's a very historic event in the world of golf, and it doesn't probably get the complete recognition as I feel like it should after being a part of that event. And so to win that in 21, and, you know, was a massive victory for me in the sense of checking things off I want on my CV. I've always said, you know, I've got the 4 majors, I've got the Players' Championship. And then, you know, after playing BMW PGA in 19, I said, hey, I want to win this. This is a massive event I want to win after finally being a part of it. And so I added that to the list of CVs. And so to finally get, you know, one of the massive victories, one of the big victories I wanted on that goals list was amazing. So, listen, I've been very fortunate enough to do some unbelievable things in the game of golf. I still got a few boxes that I need to check off, you know, a Players Championship, you know, at least get a major before my time's done. And then obviously I want to make a Ryder Cup team. I mean, I got fortunate enough to make a President's Cup team last year, and then finally make a team was amazing, and to be a part of that entire arena and be a part with the boys. But the Ryder Cup is where it is for me. I mean, just that entire atmosphere and energy. And listen, whether it's a home or away, I'll take it. But honestly, for some reason, I want to do an away Ryder Cup. I think I'd have more enjoyment. It would be more exciting for me to play an away Ryder Cup, you know, than a home one. I don't know why that is, but it's just something I've always said. Hey, if I would make a Ryder Cup, it would be an away one.
Do you like the idea of the hostile crowd? Because I'm quite similar. I'd like to play one in the States if I could, and like get booed for a few days and have that sort of pantomime kind of like feeling, if that makes sense, of being in that hostile kind of crowd. I really like the idea. Is that similar?
Yeah, I think I just like that underdog role, the expectation that, you know, you're not the favorite, you don't have the crowd behind you, your support is limited. I've always enjoyed it. I don't know if that goes back to playing the Walker Cup in 2007 at Royal County Down. I've always just loved that, where you got everyone against you, everyone pulling against you, no one's expecting anything, you know, not expecting you guys to win, or the expectations or percentages are low. You know, I just love proving people wrong. I've always, in my entire life, I love proving people wrong and showing them, hey, you thought I couldn't do this and I was able to do it. So yeah. And I guess also, you know, for me, you know, having played on the DP World Tour now for, you know, spending more time over there the last few years, you know, I love the crowd. I love the European crowd. I love the chant you guys have. You guys are original. It's funny. It's cool to listen to the way you guys dress up and everything. I just have gotten along very well with the European Tour crowd. And I think maybe if I did make a way Ryder Cup, you know, I would get less, less banter and heckling than maybe some other guys on the team.
Oh, mate, honestly, we were there a couple weeks ago, a few weeks ago, and my favorite chant was to Patrick Cantlay. You must have heard it when they were all singing hats off for your bank account.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter. And then I heard it through the TV one time, and I saw a video of it on social media. That was, it's like I said, you guys over there, the originality of coming up with these chants and these sayings and songs, I mean, it's beautiful. It really is beautiful. I mean, obviously, it goes back to the football and the chants and everything that, you know, you hear during Premier League matches and throughout the other stadiums in the UK. So, listen, you guys one-up us. I mean, you guys got us so far beaten in the United States on that. You know, we can never match the European tour crowd in that way.
Yeah, they do. They come up with some funny stuff. Talking of that as well, football, you're a West Ham fan as well.
I am. Yep. Watched the movie Green Street. Obviously, it's called Green Street over there. It's called Green Street Hooligans in the U.S. Watched that in college my sophomore year, beginning of my sophomore year. And I love the movie. I thought first time I saw Charlie Hunnam as an actor, I thought he was awesome. Became a Charlie Hunnam fan and Elijah Wood. And I don't know, maybe I wanted to be a hooligan, you know, deep down somewhere and go fight some other some other hooligans from other clubs.
Yeah, you've been to a few games, right?
Yeah, I've probably been to, man, the last 2 to 3 years, I've probably been to about 8 to 10 games. I've been to a couple away games and obviously a lot of games over at London Stadium. I think the biggest regret I had was never making it to a game at Upton Park. That ground, you know, just hearing the stories and night games there were pretty amazing.
Hang on. Let me take a second minute. You've been to away games?
Yeah, I've been to Chelsea.
Have you been in the away end with the West Ham fans?
Yeah, so Chelsea, I was at the away end 2 years ago when VAR called off the goal that Maxwell Cornet had, you know, right at the end of, you know, I think it may be extra time to tie it up. Yeah, I've been in that section. I remember I'm sitting in the waist section. The boys are coming towards my end of the stadium. I don't know what, you know, north, south, east, west. I can't remember. Cornet scores and everybody runs towards this corner flag where we're sitting. And I just remember the boys going absolutely crazy. Myself and my stats guy, who's a massive West Ham fan, Mark Horton, we jump in. There's no one sitting in front of us. I think we had the railing. But I remember we jump up and I like landed on my seat and I broke the seat that I was sitting in. And I don't even remember. I mean, just absolutely insanity ensued. And I mean, we're going crazy. Declan Rice, who's a really good friend of mine, he knew I was sitting there. I saw him earlier before match started, and you know, he points at us and he just gives me like the big fist pump and gives me the hammers, you know, sign. And we're going absolutely crazy. And then all of a sudden, you know, 2 minutes later, VAR calls it off for a BS foul. And then, you know, we walk outside the stadium 5 minutes later and West Ham fans, obviously we're leaving the visitor section. You got this little rope, you know, separating the West Ham and Chelsea fans. And all of a sudden the rope's going to end. We're all going to get right next to each other. And all of a sudden, you know, everyone's, you know, yelling back and forth and I'm just listening to it. And all of a sudden the rope ends and some guys are going at it. And then like, there's a fight and it breaks out and 20 people are fighting and the cops come in and break it up real quickly.
That is epic, man. I didn't realize you've been to so many away games. That is so good. I absolutely love that.
My goal is I want to go to as many away games as I can. Obviously, golf gets in the way. But, you know, when I start slowing down playing, you know, in the next decade, I'll try to get over. My plan is to get over there more and to go to more of the away games. And I really want to, like, travel with the West Ham supporters, you know, to the game and everything. Like, that's like, just that camaraderie.
Amazing. Well, I'll definitely come and meet you for a few pints after the Arsenal game when you go.
Yeah.
I know we've drifted away from golf. Again, I wanted to talk about your highest ranking as being 11th in the world, which, again, is incredible. I want to know, when you get to 11th in the world, what kind of perks, what's the best perk you've had from being 11th best player in the world?
I think, you know, when you get to that ranking, you have just won something. and, you know, won a big event. And so you get people that reach out to you that you may not, you know, that got your number, and you're like, oh, wow, this guy just reached out to me, you know, congratulated me.
Who? You can't just say this guy. Who?
Okay, I'm remembering one now, and it's Tiger. When he messages you, it's pretty cool. But he messaged me at Memorial after I won that in 2022, last year. And he said, awesome playing. That was special to watch. Congrats. And I sent him a text back saying, I just try to play, you know, the way you would, and attack the course the way you would, you know, with a 5-shot lead going in the final day. And he said, you know, I never played, you know, Murfield the way you did on Saturday, and I played unbelievable Saturday. I think I shot like 65, and the next best score in like that 2-hour window with, you know, because I was one of the later groups, you know, 2 hours in front of me was like 69 or 70 or 71. So it was a really tough afternoon. I played unbelievable. You know, he said, hey, I'd never played Memorial or Murfield that way, the way you did on Saturday. So those little words of advice or encouragement, or little things that Tiger throws out, listen, that's like solid gold. Like, you take that and you put that in your memory bank, and you put that in your confidence bank, and you hold on to that, and you make sure no one ever, you know, takes that away from you, because that's such a special thing to get some, you know, some congratulatory words from a player like him, as we all know.
Wow, I mean, that's amazing. How do you treat it when he texts you? Do you look at it and sort of treat it like you're dating this girl you've been trying to date, and not sort of message back immediately or sound too keen? Do you try and play it cool with Tiger, or did you message straight back?
You know, so I message straight back. Listen, I said, I've been friends with him for many years now, and I don't let that one sit for like an hour or two and say, I'll get back to an hour or two. No, that one gets back to right away. So, it's cool. I mean, I'm fortunate enough that I'll shoot him text messages from time to time. You know, nothing really about golf. Something about, like, you know, he's a big Las Vegas Raiders fan, or a Stanford fan, or, you know, Lakers fan, and, you know, I'll shoot him stuff like that, or checking on his kids and how he's doing. But yeah, listen, he's an awesome guy. He's a really good guy, and like I said, I'm very fortunate enough to call him a friend.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's really cool. And it's nice that you hear someone of their stature, you know, like, sort of sending them pieces of encouragement, advice and stuff to players as well, and like feeding everyone with that, because there's not one golfer that doesn't look up to him.
You're exactly right. I mean, he's, listen, you know, for the last 25 plus years, he's been the golfer that if you get involved in a game of golf, it's because of him more than likely. He's probably the number one reason why guys are playing the game of golf over the last 25 years, men or women. And so, like I said, to have that relationship, to have, you know, be able to reach out to him, to have him, you know, send me, you know, words of encouragement or advice from time to time, you know, to have someone like that, you know, in your corner if you need to talk to, it's never a bad thing. And he's a regular guy. He's a regular guy. I would never want to be in his shoes, because he can't go out in public without people taking photos or autographs. He just can't go out to restaurants, you know, and sit, you know, where everyone else sits, because people are just going to come up and bombard him. But he is honestly just a regular guy that just wants to be a regular guy, that he's done something, you know, at a level that no one else has in the game of golf. But he tries to just live a life like everyone else would. You know, be with his kids. You know, he likes to play Call of Duty, which I'm not a big gamer, but he loves to play Call of Duty. So yeah, and you know, he makes, you know, like a, you know, you, people look at him as a godlike person, and he is in some ways, but he makes dumb jokes as well. I mean, he makes jokes that are like, man, that's not funny. What are you talking about? You know, like, he's just a regular guy.
I can't believe he plays Call of Duty. Imagine logging on online and stuff, and it comes up, and you work out like his PlayStation or Xbox tag, something like that, and you figured now you're going head to head on Call of Duty with Tiger. That's incredible.
Yeah, I guess I've heard this story before. I don't know if I was there when he told her, or heard him say it some in another place, but guess he got into it early, you know, a decade ago or so. And he was playing. He thought he was really good, you know, early on when he started playing. And he joined some session. And I guess there was like some 12-year-old just talking, you know, just giving him shit on there, you know, for how bad he was and everything. And the 12-year-old didn't even know it was Tiger Woods. Like, he's just talking, you know, smack talk to him because the guy's awful on Call of Duty. But I've heard that story, whether I think Tiger told or someone else, I've heard it through somebody else, but that was in his early days of Call of Duty. I'm going to say he's probably a lot better knowing that guy and knowing that personality. He's not going to be, if he does something, he's not going to be bad at it. So I'm sure he's improved his Call of Duty skills tremendously since those early days.
So good. Again, mate, we've I love this because it's flowing so nice. One of the things I wanted to chat about was obviously we spoke about where your world rankings and where you've got to and your achievements and stuff. Recently, we all know about Liv not being eligible for world ranking points. And I know you've been quite vocal about that whole situation. What's your take on that?
Yeah. Listen, my stance from the very beginning was I never had any issue with Liv, with them starting a league, with the Saudis, anything like that. My issue was when the players left, the way they left, the way they, threw shit up on the wall as they walked out, you know, said some stuff that wasn't true, complained about things that, you know, they were never brought up when they were on the PGA Tour, but they would bring them up as they left, you know, walked out the door. So I just didn't like that aspect of it. I didn't like that, you know, some guys were complaining that both tours were just enforcing the rules that they were able to enforce on their bylaws. And so, listen, I don't have any issues with guys going to make more money. Like, if that's the reason you play the game of golf and that's the reason, you know, it drives you, like, and you want to take care of your family financially and set them up for a better life, like, all for it, man. Like, I'm never going to stop anyone from trying to make money. Like, that's, you know, you're trying to make a better life for your family and your kids. And like, I'm always supportive of that. So listen, I mean, it's been a fraction for the last 18 months. And, you know, I'm, you know, some things I've said may have played a, you know, very, very small part in that. Hopefully it hasn't, but I'm not naive to think that some of my stuff has been played a small part in it. But, you know, with this world ranking situation, do I think they should get world ranking points? I've gone back and forth. I mean, if they met the criteria that is set by the OWGR, then, you know, I have no problem with getting world ranking points. I mean, I saw some stuff that people think that the OWGR should change their criteria to fit what the Live Golf does and everything. I don't agree with that. You knew the criteria. You knew what the OWGR, you know, what you needed to do as a tour to get world ranking points. And I guess from what I read, you know, the OWGR sent some stuff to him saying, hey, if you made these few changes, you know, this would improve your chances of getting world ranking points. You know, and I would say if I'm a Live, one of the Liv's executives, I would look at making those changes to get the points. Listen, I don't know how it's all going to play out. You know, there's great players out there. Listen, those guys are still great, even though they went to Liv. I never thought they weren't going to be great or they weren't going to be competitive. But I think, you know, how this deal is going to work with, if it works or how it works out with the PGA Tour and PIF and DP World Tour, I have no clue. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't shocked by the no world ranking points as of right now, but, you know, we'll see what happens. I would, like I said, if I was an executive, I would, you know, look at making a few changes to try and give those players opportunity to be ranked, in the world of golf.
Yeah, I agree with you. I found it sort of the backlash between, not backlash, but the comments players saying it's a bit of a joke. I mean, I openly spoke and I sit on the same sort of wavelength as you, where I don't judge anyone for going, but you kind of knew what you were getting into. And I kind of, if I was to put myself in that shoes and thought, well, if I went to Live, I would sort of wave goodbye to the majors or Ryder Cups or whatever and things like that. And that's the kind of route you go down, and I'd fully expect that to happen and not sort of try and play back on any of the tours or the Ryder Cups or anything like that and just move across. And that's the kind of decision you make. So I was quite surprised when people were saying it's a bit of a joke. And I was thinking, well, surely you knew, or you're going to expect that you're not going to get world ranking points for that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I said that, you know, a year ago. I said when these guys left, they had to, I mean, either they or the people representing them, their agents or whoever it may be, or the team around them, you know, you had to look at it in a complete 360-degree view. You had to understand that if you go to LIV, you may not be eligible for majors. You may not get world ranking points. You know, you're giving something away to get something in return, and that's, you know, guaranteed, you know, money, assigned for a guaranteed amount of money, and you're playing for, you know, more money and you're playing less. So you're getting stuff in return for what you were giving up. And if you thought you were going to get all these things that you gave up and still have everything you were gaining, that's a very naive way to think, in my opinion. Yeah, it's here, it's done. You know, I'm not the one making decisions on it at all. I leave that to people who've done it for many more years, and I have no desire to be involved in any of that.
Obviously, you're a PGA Tour player and you play on DP World Tour as well. Where are some of the favorite places you go to year in, year out?
Well, listen, I mean, we play in a lot of great places here in the States. I mean, I love playing the Farmers. I love playing out there in San Diego, La Jolla, beautiful area, great golf course. I love New Orleans. I love New Orleans. You know, obviously, New Orleans has this notion that it's, you know, can be dirty and everything, but the food's unbelievable. The people are so great. I mean, the people are so great. They welcome you with open arms. They want you to experience their city beyond Bourbon Street, what everyone thinks of, because it is a great city. So I love going there. You know, when you go overseas now, listen, I love to be in WPGA. I love being in London. London's probably my favorite city in the world. My wife and I love going there. We're bringing our kids actually the week before Christmas for the first time to London to hang out and do a few things around London.
Talking New Orleans, I was there 2017 and we went into one restaurant and I think I ate the best steak tartare I've ever eaten in my life. Honestly, there was a group of us. There was like eight of us and we ordered two, right? Just like loads of different starters to try out. And it was in like a, almost like a tumbler glass, right? But it had this layer of like beef fat at the top. So you'd get like the toast and you'd spread it. And I took one bite and I screamed at the waiter and I was like, we'll have four more of these, please.
I'm not sure if there's a better city for food than New Orleans, because there's not another city in the U.S. that can do the Cajun food the way they do it down in New Orleans. And then you still get your great Italian food that you have there. You still get your great, you know, fish and sushi and steak and everything. So that city and the culinary aspect of it, and you look at, you know, some of the great, you know, chefs that have come up, there's not many restaurants you walk into that you're going to get a bad meal.
Love that. Absolutely love that. There's another thing we like to talk about here on Beef's Golf Club as well. It's opening tee shots. I've had a couple of disasters. Tony Finau nearly had a really messy disaster. Have you had any bad or disaster opening tee shots or embarrassing moments?
Not that I can think of. I mean, listen, the two tee shots that I get, the one tee shot I get the most nervous about every year is the first tee shot at Augusta. I mean, that's, I don't know why it is. There's not another tee shot where I'm anywhere close to as nervous as I am on that one. It just feels like the crowd's really so close to you. The fans are so close to you. Patrons. Let me get that right. Patrons are very close. And then, I mean, the fairway's pretty big, decently sized, but it's just, that's just a nerve-wracking tee shot. Obviously, it's Augusta. It's the Masters. So that's very nerve-wracking every year. And then last year at the President's Cup, that first tee shot on that par five, like I felt very calm and I was ready to go. And I warmed up great. you know, felt very, you know, relaxed. And then it was my turn to hit the tee shot. I don't know if they call your name or they call your team, but it was my turn to hit the tee shot. And I put my tee in the ground. I make some nice slow practice swings. And my tendency is, I mean, I'm quick already. I have a fast paced swing already. So I've got to make sure I'm a little slow when I can feel, you know, a little like I'm going, like my heartbeat's racing. And I feel like I'm all good. And then I get over the ball. And then I don't remember what happened over the ball. I mean, all I remember is next thing you know, I was in my finish and the ball was going where I wanted, but it went like 25 yards longer than it ever has gone in my life. I mean, just absolutely flushed it and it went so far. But I just don't remember this. I don't remember taking it back and I don't remember even the strike of the golf ball. I just remember being in my finish and seeing the ball, you know, go somewhat straight down the fairway. So that first tee shot was insane.
Whoa. And that's what it's going to be like when you play in the Ryder Cup and you're playing against your good old mate Rory as well. I heard the funny story about Rory in the, it was Walker Cup, wasn't it? 2007.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you kind of got under his skin. That was brilliant.
Listen, as I said, you know, going over there, when we were going over, because we had never won there in 20 years, the World Cup team. And I said to the guys, I'm like, hey, I'm going to be like Sergio Garcia this week. Like, I mean, they already knew that's my personality a little bit. But like, I'm going to be the guy, like the cheerleader. I'm going to have the pom-poms on. I'm going to – at the time, I didn't think it was obnoxious. I just thought it was very, you know, fired up and giddy and ready to go. You know, whether I made big putts or my teammate or Ricky made did something special. I look back at it now and yeah, it was obnoxious a little bit. There's no doubt about it. You know, when I made a big putt, I was fist pumping and yelling and screaming. And listen, I remember coming out of a bunker, Ricky hit in this bunker that was in like dead zone. I hit this unbelievable bunker shot that was like 30 yards away and it was running down the hill. And I come running out of the bunker and I'm running down the hill like a cheetah or a gazelle and cheering at the top of my end, like, go in, go in. And it like lips out, I think, or just burn the edge. Obviously that looked like an idiot, you know, as I think about it now. But as a 20-year-old, you don't know any better. You think this is a, you know, you're on top of the world right now as a 20-year-old. And so obviously I knew Rory took some offense to it. His comments afterwards, I knew he took some offense to, you know, the way things were. Obviously he was on Colt Knows Subpar podcast. And so we're playing the Irish Open, you know, a month ago. I'm paired with him the first 2 days. We tee off on number 10 Thursday morning. We hit our tee shots and we're walking off tee. And he says, hey, Bill, I got to tell you something. I'm like, okay, what's up, Rory? And he said, hey, so I finally did Colt's podcast. I said, that's cool. I know they've been trying to get you on, and that's cool that you did it. And he goes, yeah, well, they asked me a question. Who would I rather punch more, the 2016 Patrick Reed at the Whistling or Hazeltine Ryder Cup or the 2007 Billy Horschel at Royal County Down Walker Cup? And he goes, oh, by far, Billy Horschel. And he goes, I picked you. And I was like, and he's like, and he tried to like, you know, explain why. And like, I'm like, Rory, we're good. Like, I understand. I would have punched myself too back then if I could, you know, I would punch myself now if I could back then. But he's like, you know, he told me the reason why. I'm not going to tell you one of the reasons he told me. That's a private thing. But yeah, we just started laughing about it and it was hysterical. And then I saw him post it, I think, a couple days later. But, yeah, I got a kick out of that. Rory and I are really good friends and really good buddies now. As we both said, you know, he was 18, I was 20. We're both young adults. We were still very immature. We were still very I was very obnoxious back then. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, you do things when you're younger that you look back at and you're like, man, that was just – he's sort of like, oh, I really did that. And that was one for me. Thankfully, I know it was aired a little bit, maybe more in the UK than it was in the US. But yeah, there was times like that. I'm happy those videos aren't coming out.
I think the American team would love a bit of that as well, in terms of having you on the team and being that T team player, getting the crowd hyped up. I think you'll be a massive asset in that American team with that kind of mentality and stuff. And, you know, it brings out the raw emotions, but the crowd gets behind it. The team gets behind it. I'd love to see that. I love it when players hold a shot or hit certain shots and the emotion that runs through it. Like being at Rome this year and I happened to stumble out onto the 15th where it was the Saturday afternoon and it was the Patrick Cantlay where he birdied the last three holes. Coming in, and I mean, he was getting so much stick from the crowd, and the way he finished and birdied them three holes with the crowd like that, I was like, wow. And like, you could see on 18 when he knocked in that putt, and obviously his caddy Joey, and like, I've always known Joey as pretty mellow as well, and like pretty chilled out and stuff, and like, even to see him get amped up in that situation, I'm not surprised. But that's why that Ryder Cup and the team format is so different and so special as well. What did you think of that when that happened?
I was watching that, you know, just like, you know, probably millions of other golf fans and fans around the world. You know, watching that putt was insane that Patrick just hit. You know, he had what looked like a pretty basic chip, and he hit an awful chip. You know, as any commentator would say, that was pretty awful to hit it to 40 feet when you're, you know, you were just off the green, not far from the hole. And then him making that putt and everyone going crazy because I know, well, I think that secured a half a point. Yeah, I mean, and the way he finished those last two holes was impressive. You know, obviously it reminds you a lot of Ian Poulter in 2012. But to see the way Joey was, and I wasn't paying attention much on TV after he made it. And then you see all the stuff on social media and you see the way Joey reacted. And LaCava is one of the best guys out there, one of the best caddies out there. That's very unusual to see LaCava do something like that. And obviously I think he was, you know, as any person would, especially if it's your player, a friend, the family, you know, if you're inside the ropes of that person and they're getting a lot of stick, you know, walking in throughout the entire day and everything. And then they finally sort of do something, you know, special over a few amount of holes, you know, you're going to react in a way that, you know, you want to give it back. You want to give it back. It's human nature. You want to give it back. And I think LaCava did, and you know, maybe, you know, I think he went a little too far. There's no doubt about saying that. I think he went a little too far, but I'm not, like I said, it was something unusual to see from Joey, but Joey's a very passionate guy. He's very reserved in it. He's a New York sports fan, and we all know how New York sports lovers are. I mean, they're passionate about their teams, and he's very passionate and cares a lot about the people he works for.
Talking of New York as well, the next Ryder Cup is going to be there, and that is going to be rowdy as.
Yeah. It's listen, it's going to be an unreal atmosphere. I think I said it at Dunhill to a reporter a couple weeks ago. There's not many better sports fans in the world than the New York area sport fan. My only worry is that we know at the same time how they can be, and we know how the Ryder Cups have gone the last few years and the way fans have sort of got a little bit out of control. And it's not the entire crowd. It's a very small portion. But those New York sport fans, they're great. I hope there's some level of respect amongst both, you know, the American fans and the European fans. And there's some level of respect for their competitors while they're out there trying to compete at the highest level and win a competition to, you know, for the country or for their continent and for their people. So, you know, unfortunately, as much as I can, you know, wishfully think it's going to be, you know, a very proper sporting event with people, you know, doing the right things and supporting in the right way, we know that's not going to be necessarily true when it comes in 2 years to Bethpage and on Long Island.
So, mate, we're creating the dream golf club here at Beef's Golf Club. What are some of the best golf club houses and golf courses you've been to?
You know, I actually had this question the other day. Someone asked me, like, what's the best locker rooms on the PGA Tour? And listen, there's some unbelievable new clubhouses. That locker rooms are insane. I mean, every amenity you could imagine. But I love the old school clubhouses. For some reason, I love those old school clubhouses that have that, sort of musty smell in there. It's that wood that's been there for, you know, 100 years plus, you know. I love that. I love like a really great, you know, sitting area, hangout area in the men's locker room where people are just hanging out, watching TV, you know, maybe playing some cards, gambling a little bit. Like, I just think that's a really cool, you know, hangout spot that, you know, I would want in a dream club of mine.
I was just about to ask, what would you add here to Beef's Golf Club? Would you add an old school locker room with some card games and stuff going on?
Yeah, I would. I would add that, and then you add in your modern touches like the sauna, cold tank. You know, you've got a great gym in there or something. You know, you got your modern amenities for the guys that like to do that, which I am one of those guys. But you still have your old school feel, your old school, just hangout area in a locker room.
Ice bath or like a is it? Cryotherapy chamber.
Ice bath. I can't. Cryotherapy, I don't think is. I mean, I know people do it, and I haven't seen the. I'm not saying it doesn't work and the effects are different for everyone, but I like the ice bath. I mean, I've got a cold plunge in my house. Get in the water, you know, 5 to 8 minutes. So, yeah, that's what I would have in there.
And what card games are we playing here?
Listen, you got to have gin in there, right? I mean, gin around me, everyone plays gin. So that's a staple in a clubhouse anywhere around at least the US.
There it is, man. Gin rummy. That is it. I was talking the other day to producer Ryan and another guest, Tubes, on here about golden tea games.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever play golden?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I was a kid. And, I mean, we would have baseball games, and you know, we'd go to. I would say it was like a local pub, but it's this place called Beef O'Brady's, where I had wings and sporty. It's like a sports bar, or it was a sports bar. We'd get wings after a baseball game, or we'd go there sometime with my dad, just hang out with buddies, and they would have golden tea. Like, and listen, we weren't a family that had a lot of money, and obviously. Not that golden tea was expensive, but to play for a long amount of time, it took money. It took, you know, $10, $15, which is a lot of money still. But yeah, I mean, I love golden tea. I love playing that game. Funny story is Paul Tesori, who used to work for Webb Simpson for a while, was with Vijay Singh too, and he's with Cameron Young now. You know, he was like ranked nationally number two on golden tea. Like there was a golden tea like tour back in the day in the US, and like he was ranked like number one or two in like the golden tee rankings for players.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
We might need to get him in here as like a guide or someone there can just stand there and work the golden tee and explain the rules to everyone and teach everyone how to play. We might need him in here.
Listen, I think they found the golden tee in the last couple of years somewhere, and he was on there, you know, doing his thing as he normally was way back in the day. But yeah, there's a little hidden secret about Paul Tesori if people didn't know that.
And we've already spoke a little bit about your love for food. If you've got your dream locker room and you're sitting there, what would you want to see on the menu in terms of food and drink?
Listen, when it comes to like main entrees, like I'm not the pickiest at all by that. Like I can pretty much eat anything, and I'm open to having anything and everything, but I love sweets. I love sweets. Like I have a massive sweet tooth. You would have to have, it wouldn't be on the menu, but it would have to be sort of, you know, out there in the open. You'd have to have double stuffed Oreos. Like I love double stuffed Oreos, and you would have to have milk.
Double stuffed Oreos.
Yeah. And so there's times in college that I would go through an entire pack of double stuffed Oreos and a half gallon of milk, you know, in like a sitting. Like I would just sit there and watch TV and just like boom, boom, eat, drink, boom. Like, yeah, no problem. I love like milk and cookies, like cookies and cream, like milkshakes. So that would be like a milkshake that would be on the menu.
Yes.
And then when it comes to ice cream, like, obviously, there's so many different type of flavors of ice cream, but I'm pretty basic. I love a really good vanilla, just a vanilla ice cream. But then I would want like a good like fudge brownie, a brownie with like chocolate all over it. as another option on the menu. So like I said, I mean, when it comes to like main entrees, like I'll eat anything. I'm not really picky. Like I love sushi, steak, whatever. But when it comes to sweets, like I've got a good idea of like always what I want for, you know, my sitting of having sweets.
What we'll do is there'll be a little compartment in your locker that will just basically always be stocked with your favorites, double stuffed Oreo, Swedish fish, everything in there. And then this little sort of fridge area for all your milk as well. We'll put that in the locker room as well. So you've got like your secret stash.
Sounds good. Love it. Love it.
Also, mate, we asked all our guests to add a rule to the Board of Commandments here at the club. What would you like to add?
I'm not a big fan of, you know, I'm not, it's not that I'm not a big fan. I don't mind if people play in a 5-some, 6-some, 7-some, 8-some. Like, I think allow that. If they're not holding up play and they're getting along, you know, moving along at a pace that is not holding anyone up and playing fast and everything, let that happen. Like, I don't mind that at all. Like, let them play as many people in a group as they want, as long as they're not holding up play. And if they want, they can let the group behind them go ahead, play through. So yeah, that's one of the rules that I would always have.
Love it, man. Love it. Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Absolutely. I've got one last question before we go. If we sorted you out some limited edition Beefs Golf Club balls, would you use them on tour?
Oh. I'm a little superstitious with the golf balls I use. I'm not going to lie. Don't know. I mean, don't know if I would use them. I'm going to be honest with you. As much as that would be really cool, I'm very superstitious and I mark my golf ball the same way every time. You know, everything's done the same. I use the same numbers or, you know, 1 on Thursdays, 2 on Fridays, 3 on Saturdays, 4 on Sundays. I've thought about, you know, when I'm not playing well, like switching it up to change a mojo. But then I'm like, no, this way's worked for so long. We're just going through a little dry spell. It'll come back. So I'm a little, I have some superstitions when it comes to the stuff on the golf course a little bit.
Maybe we'll just stick them on a shelf somewhere.
We can use them as practice balls and then I can sign them and give them away to fans out there.
There we go. Yeah, there we go. Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure and it's been amazing having you on, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure. Happy to be a part of it.
What an absolute guy Billy Horschel is. I mean, away in the West Ham stand, he's slowly becoming a West Ham hooligan. I absolutely love it. Having a go at Chelsea fans, I love him even more now. Also as well, dropping the T-bomb as well, playing Call of Duty. What? I want to log on. I want to play Call of Duty now. He doesn't even have an effect on golf. He has effect on PlayStation games as well. I want to go out and buy the next Call of Duty and see if I can face him online. Anyway, guys, if you're new to Beefs Golf Club, go and check out some of our older episodes where we build the club up from scratch. You can also get in touch with your ideas and questions. Email beef@crowdnetwork.co.uk or follow us on social media at Beefs Golf Club. Have a good week, everyone, and see you next time. Take care.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.